One of the things we've been watching this week, specifically in Europe, have been efforts by Tesco and Metro, who've certainly been pushing RFID efforts beyond what a lot of their U.S. counterparts have been doing. Specifically, Metro's item-level plans have been getting some conversation. We're expecting in early September Metro to go fairly public with a lot of their specific plans on item-level, which, again, will be more, shall we say, adventurous than a lot of the efforts here in the States. Paula, how much of a significance do you see what they are doing on item level versus what a lot of the U.S. retailers are attempting to do with the same item level RFID efforts?
Well, I mean, I think at the end of the day, item level is probably where RFID is going to make a big difference. I've never been as bullish about case and pallet tags in the supply chain as I have at the end, like I said, down the road on item level. For one thing, one thing that hasn't been talked about much is stores spend a sort of stunning amount every year on physical inventory. I used to call it a tithe to companies like RGIS and Washington. There's all the inventory preparation work, and then there's all the actual work, and you get some. You certainly don't get 100% accuracy when you're done. So just like when barcode came in and locator systems came into distribution centers, retailers were able to eliminate the end-of-year inventory, which was an expense and a pain in the neck, with cycle counts. By the same token, RFID at an item level ultimately down the road has the capability to provide that kind of return on investment in stores. Now, clearly, anything you're doing around item level sort of brings that value to bear down the road. But it goes back to the same conversation we just had on cell phones, which is the privacy issues aren't going away anytime soon. The dilemma that I haven't quite figured out is on anything besides peas and cheese and disposable items, you're going to need a kill switch, and the ability to kill the RFID tag when you leave. And then what do you do with returns? And I haven't quite sort of ferreted through that. So I think the future, shows a lot of promise for RFID on an item level. I don't think we're there yet, and I think it's more an issue of the cost of the reader than it is on the cost of the tag itself. But I see, like I said, a lot of opportunity over the longer term.
I completely concur with Paula. I think that the big issue here is the privacy factor, and there's tremendous potential for it. But you have to really make sure that you're not intruding on the consumer's right to privacy in a way that they're not going to be compliant with, and they're not going to be pleased with.
Now, the typical argument has been when obviously the privacy issue on RFID at item level has come up before. The typical argument has been that it's impractical, even if retailers wanted to track consumers when they left the store or in any one of a series of means, that it would be impractical to do so. What's the panel's thought? Is that a legit privacy concern, or is it more of a perception-only concern?
Doesn't matter. If it's impractical today, it may not be impractical tomorrow. And in a sense, the reality of whether it's practical or not doesn't matter relative to the perception of the possibility.
Well, and also, it may end up being practical in the future to actually do it, although I think that's quite a few years down the road. What is the real ultimate benefit you're gaining from this, and how are you going to use that information is really the key. You know, a lot of this is, yes, I can track one individual customer who leaves my store and does something with the product afterwards. Well, what are you really going to do, and what decisions are you going to make based on that information is kind of the critical issue, and I'm not necessarily sure that is the best place for the retailers to spend their time and money learning about customer behavior in order to drive their businesses forward.
I mean, the old example that was used, the whole technology has been talked about for 3 years, but the original, the original example that was used is you could walk into a store, they could read the label, see what you're wearing, and then recommend sort of suggested items and based on the fact that you like this, perhaps you'd like this, do direct marketing to you. So it wouldn't be outside the store, it would be in the store. And I found that whenever I talked about that with women, they were very offended by it, whereas men just sort of shrugged. On the other hand, when the notion of being able to scan your trash to find out what groceries you bought in the store was brought up, oddly enough, men were more offended by that than women. You know, so there are some really kind of funny reactions that people go through. I know for myself, I had a real visceral issue around, what do you mean you're going to tell me I'm wearing the wrong thing? You know?
Well, you have to understand, women like clothing and men like their trash, so it's all a perspective issue. There's another fascinating item that I wanted to bring up in connection with Metro, which is simply that they have done something that not that many companies have done, which is to chase Walmart away, that they've chased them out of Germany. They've gotten a concession from Walmart on Germany, who's essentially selling their stores over to them. Mm-hmm. And this is not the first time in Europe. They have also, Walmart has also gotten its carts kicked a wee bit in the UK, where similar activities have happened. Paul, I know you'd had some thoughts on that, and the question I was going to throw out is simply, is Walmart's approach, which is a tad on the aggressive side, is that approach going to continue to work outside the U.S. borders?
I think there are probably some countries where it will, and there'll be a lot of countries where it won't. And you know, I can say somewhat controversially, I'm not convinced it's working all that well in the U.S. anymore. I'm not saying that Walmart is going away anytime soon, but I do think their growth has plateaued. I do think they found themselves stuck selling lower margin, continually moving into categories that are lower and lower margins. And, you know, supermarkets were easy pickings in some ways. But the notion of being able to sell commodities is kind of running its course. Now the consumer is looking for more interesting products. And even Walmart themselves in this country are now starting campaigns like Move Beyond the Basics, trying to get into higher margin items.
One perspective has been that where Walmart, who has done everything very aggressively from their supply chain to boosting margins out of their suppliers, the one area where they've dropped the ball continually has been customer service. Would this be any indication that their customer service shortfalls have been coming home to roost, or is that not really relevant here?
No, I think that the consumer is, I think that retailers overall, quite frankly, their customer service barely passes the bar of competency, what to speak of excellence, and the consumer is growing weary of it. There's been so much focus on the supply chain the last 5-7 years that, and again, as margins decrease, it's retailers' natural reaction to cut payroll in response so that you can keep your earnings there. And so what has suffered has been customer service. And Walmart never pretended. I think there have been public statements by them. They've never pretended to be customer-centric, per se. Unfortunately, the customer would like to have service from time to time. And so that's where there's a market for other retailers, and that's where the mid-market's been outperforming the channel masters. But going back to your earlier question, you know, it's also about how much growth from a retailer perspective, from the insider perspective, what are the gross margin dollars you're getting out of every time you ring the register? And the bottom line is that the categories that Walmart's gotten into over the last few years are lower and lower margin. Toys never had a great margin. Groceries, God knows, don't have a particularly good margin. Most of the electronics they sell don't have a very good margin. And so you want to move more into fashion because ideally you get more gross margin dollars there. You want to move uptown, as I call it. That's a dangerous game to play. It's really a dangerous retailer game to play because you run the risk of not attracting new customers because they're snobs, and alienating your old customers because they think you're becoming a snob.
Right. You might also look at the Target example that is kind of contrary to that, where they've been very successful at doing exactly that, and have, you know, been encroaching upon some of Walmart's market share, not a lot, certainly, but been doing very well in terms of margin as well.
Yeah, Target is great. I mean, they've managed to bring product innovation into the low price realm, and you know, the Target name is like a joke that goes around. That's true. They've done a phenomenal job. I don't think Walmart can imitate them. You know.
Yeah, it's always easier to go down market wherever you start. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to go up market if you start at the bottom.
Agreed. Do you think that Walmart's peaked?
Well, I think that definitely, you know, part of their growth strategy for growing international is that they have pretty much maxed out everything that they can do within the U.S. The only other places where they don't have a presence is in big urban centers. But they have so much resistance in so many markets within the U.S. that that's a huge impediment for them, and it'll be very difficult for them to do cost effectively without you know, winning over the consumers in those regions through either higher wages or you know, a lot of community programs. So they go for this international strategy, and you know, pretty much their international strategy has been about growing through other retail chains. They simply haven't been able to get you know, much traction. There was one excellent retail article that was written in one of the business journals about Walmart's approach in Mexico and how they were doing things like selling ice skates there. And you can't have a top-down merchandising strategy in places which are so regional and expect to be successful. So I think that, you know, some of their supply chain advantages and some of their merchandising assortments that work so well in the U.S., you know, just simply don't apply globally.
Was everyone as surprised as I was to learn that Walmart didn't have any form of localized assortments and that they're only just now talking about clustering their stores into four different types of clusters? Because I had no idea that they had no clusters with all the horsepower and all the computing power and all the, frankly, the money that they have. I was really surprised to find that out.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, it was not surprising because I think that their optimization strategy has always been a sort of logistically driven one rather than a merchandise assortment optimization. And so I think that though Walmart is a very smart group of people, even though they have a pretty mature business and that their existing markets are pretty saturated, but they think about things in such a logical manner that they have been experimenting with things, not the least of which in their website, to attempt to see where their changes in merchandising strategies might make sense. And so I may be a little less cautionary than you, Paula, in to say how plateaued their business might be at this point, because they have, I think that they're looking at a lot of different opportunities, not the least of which is clustering their stores and optimizing their assortment plans.